Hello, I am Amanda Wacker.
Hola, I am Lenise Castro.
Sawadee ka, I'm Asama Lekpua.
And we are the Triplicates. Welcome to the 9th episode of our second season of the Triplicates podcast. We are 3 first-gen women of color getting our PhDs at the University of California, San Diego.
Last episode, we learned a little bit more about my journey. And this episode,
we're going to be hearing about Asama's journey through science.
Asama.
Yes. Welcome to my show.
So for Lenise's episode, we kind of went chronologically. So I feel like we can chronologically also go through your journey.
Yeah. Unless you prefer chaotically.
Sometimes that happens anyways. Yeah.
I know. Like, does it? Just because we're going to go in chronological order, is it not going to be chaotic?
Life is chaos.
I agree.
Okay. Where do we start?
Where do you want to start?
Yeah, where do you want to start?
How far back do you want to take us?
Well, I always, when I introduce myself in a room full of like new people, I always tell them that I'm from Thailand. Okay. I was born and raised there and I moved here for high school. And we're coming up on like the halfway point in my life where I lived in Thailand for like 13 years and then now I'm here for like 13 years.
Oh,
so I think this is an interesting time point, I guess.
Okay.
So I was born in the southern part of Thailand. Mm-hmm. That's much closer to Malaysia than it is to Bangkok.
Okay.
So a lot of like the food I grew up eating or like culture and the things that I saw growing up eating was more like distinct than maybe like most of the food that you see in like any typical Thai restaurant. So I'm like a lover for like spices and seafood and like curry. So that's me. I grew up moving around a lot and that's mostly because my mom worked as like a traveling nurse type thing. But since she was a single mother, that also meant that I grew up having like different types of like family. Like sometimes I would get dropped off at school by my mom and then get picked up by like her coworker or like my neighbor and just like learning to adapt to like different types of like environments, which I like in hindsight, I was like, wow, that was rough. But at the time, it was super fun because I feel like I had a lot of like different friend groups.
Okay.
Like in various parts of Thailand, like growing up, and I'm still like very much connected with them.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
That's so great.
You're welcome.
Okay. So you came to America in high school. So that means you started your elementary, do they call it elementary school? Or is it like a
Primary school.
Primary school. Secondary. Okay. Yeah. So you started your schooling in Thailand. What was that like?
I would say the schooling system is very different from here. Like one of the first things I learned from high school was people would ask, what's your sport or what do you do? And I would say, I go to school. I'm confused about this.
Yeah.
So apparently from what I gathered was that people went to school and maybe they would play soccer or do dance lessons and have like extracurricular. But in Thailand, in primary school, you just go to school.
Yeah.
And then maybe if your parents have extra income, then you can go to cram school.
Cram school?
Yeah, which is something that's not unique to Thailand. In a lot of Asian countries, you sort of like, you know, the SAT or like MCAT prep classes?
Yeah.
So you do that except for every subject in your school. So a lot of my peers would go to normal school from like 7 to 2 and then go to cram school from like 3 to 9.
PM?
Yep. Yep.
And they would
be like
days?
8 years old. So it's like
when
ridiculous.
Do you eat dinner? Do you eat dinner at school?
I guess so. Yeah. But I didn't do so much of that because it gets super expensive and it gets like exclusive. So sometimes I would go to like an hour or two, like the ones that I can afford, and then like go home, do homework, blah, blah, blah. So pretty normal, but like very much like regimented. We had to get a haircut that's like the length of our earlobe and everyone looks ridiculous. Imagine having that haircut and going through puberty.
No.
Yeah. So it's pretty rough. But I would say that I don't know, I never viewed school as something that was for me. I thought it was something that everyone just did.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But I realized that I liked certain aspects of school. For example, I really liked learning English and knowing how to spell big words like refrigerator.
Okay. I can't spell that now.
Or like looking at textbooks from my older cousins or like neighbors and studying ahead.
Okay.
And because I showed like interest in those things, my teachers and my mom would notice and they would, you know, really encourage me to pursue education or like study and I don't know, get into the best program in college I could probably, which in I guess a lot of cultures or countries that means you go into medicine or pharmacy or law. Engineering, things like that. So I thought that being good at school means you're going to be in one of those like five jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it didn't matter so much like whether or not I like that field or I know anyone in that field. As long as I had the right score, then that's where I'm supposed to be. I would just figure it out.
Right, right.
How like enriched was your education with science? Because like thinking back to at least primary school, we had some, but maybe not much like. Is that, can you say the same about when you were in primary school in Thailand?
I don't remember. I was in primary school like 20 years ago. Yeah, but I wouldn't say that we had like great resources. Thailand's not known for its science. And I would learn about, I don't know, I think the science curriculum was very holistic. Like we would learn about plants, we would learn about farming, we would learn about ecology. So it was like pretty good, I guess. But there was this one distinct moment where I realized that my science education was not great. And it was when I was about, I think like 9 years old. So there was a tsunami that hit the southern part of Thailand, which if you recall is where my family's from. And it was devastating. Like so many people died. It was like so sudden. And my mom being a traveling nurse got called to like go report to this site and she had to literally work in tents and like do whatever she could because there was no one and it was awful. And I just thought to myself, like, why didn't I learn this in school? This is
tsunamis?
Yeah.
Oh.
This is horrible. Yeah. And like so many lives could have been saved if someone knew about the warning signs. And I remember watching TV and there was this interview of a British girl who was able to actually save like I don't know like how many people in headcount but dozens by just seeing the signs of the tsunami
like
of
the tide like the going
tides
up.
Went going back and she was just like, okay, everyone, we gotta go, like this is what it is. And I remember thinking, I'm the same age as her. I didn't know what this was. I couldn't have saved anyone. Here I am like again living alone. My mom's not here because she's out there like doing the best she could, but like why is my education so much worse? So after that, I just sort of like knew within my heart that like I wanted to learn. I want to be able to understand how the world works and maybe like save some people if I could.
That's so nice.
So it was like kind of jarring, but at the same time, it was kind of like a, I don't want to say a wake up call because I was like so young, but it was one of the first like moments that I realized that, look, with this knowledge, you could actually do something that is good for people.
I bet like seeing your mom do like all, I mean, she sounds like superwoman, right? Like in this story, like, how did that impact you and like your trajectory throughout your life?
Yeah, I always saw her as someone who's selfless, who's hardworking. Sometimes I thought that she worked like way more than she should. Like we didn't really spend time together growing up, but luckily I had like my extended family or like my family or my neighbors who knew about my situation and would like adopt me with open arms. Like I would spend summers with them and I have really fond memories of like growing up, like playing with them. Like it was great. But I saw my mom's career as something that's like an act of service. And it really instilled in me that not only like should you go to school and do the best that you could, but it can actually save lives literally like in her career or can benefit society. So I was always drawn to things that either were helping people in terms of like education, like acts of service is my big one because mm-hmm. I think seeing how that could impact lives like mm-hmm. was really powerful to me. I've always been drawn to like volunteering or mm-hmm. teaching because I think those things are nice and it costs nothing to me.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
Thanks.
Okay, so you had these life-defining experiences in Thailand and then you and your mom moved to America.
Yeah.
What was that like?
A lot.
Well, like, we're led still up in therapy to about it. Too.
Yeah, like why did you leave? Like, if I mean, I don't know if it's a lot.
It's pretty sensitive. But okay. What I will say was that I really admire my mom for her tenacity, for her strong will mm-hmm. to, you know, be a single mom, work, mm-hmm. pursue her career, mm-hmm. travel, do all these things. And from what I understood, at one point, my mom just wanted to get out there, get new adventures.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
See for herself what the world is like. And because not everything could happen all at the same time, seamlessly, mm-hmm. I was actually living in Thailand without my mom for like a year and a half. Mm. And even though I talk about having really strong family ties and neighbors and all those, like mm-hmm. maybe we all know it's not the same as mm-hmm. having your like mom or dad being there with you. So I would say that experience also forced me to grow up fast.
Yeah.
And sort of like being responsible for myself. There would be days where I was the one responsible for figuring out where my food comes from, getting to school, doing my own like chores, getting ready for school, paying my bills.
Okay.
But anyways, I moved here and then she said, we live in New Hampshire. And I asked her, what is New Hampshire? And we went there and it was cold. It was like summer, August. So it's supposed to be the hottest time.
Yeah.
But it was mad cold and I didn't understand anything.
Yeah.
Could not be mean.
Plus I had allergies and I was really
mad. Oh, no.
The worst.
And she said, okay, we're going to go to school. And I said, what do you mean? It's September. School should already be happening.
Yeah.
So turns out the school years at that time were not aligned. So I was actually halfway through eighth grade when I came here.
Yeah.
And we went to high school and they said, well, you can go back to eighth grade. It's called middle school. It's kind of like a weird 3-year thing.
Yeah.
But you could redo it or you can come to high school where people come from like all these different towns. And we have an ESL program, English for second language learner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe you can get better resources there. Mm-hmm. And my mom, of course, made all the decisions for me because she's my legal guardian.
Yeah.
She said, let's go to high school.
Yeah.
And then they also asked what like levels of like classes I wanted to take.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was ABC. No other explanation. So my mom said, let's do A because she thought it was the easiest one.
Oh my God, it's not.
It was the hardest one.
There's ABC levels?
Yeah. The school was huge.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was in English literature A-level, super confused, didn't know what was happening. But actually before that, they said we had a math placement test.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I can do math, I think. So I was taking this test, but everything was in English. I didn't know what a diameter was. I didn't know what a radius was. So I asked them, hey, can I get a dictionary? Because I don't know what these words meant. And they said, no, that's cheating. So I failed it.
No.
And they thought I was dumb. I'm so mad about that one, Pinkerton.
LOL.
So that was rocky to say the least.
That's wild, yeah.
But it was not all bad. I don't know why I came up with this idea, but basically I showed up to all my A-level classes. Looking very confused, dressed like an immigrant. Literally, I wore like all the layers, and even though it was like 80 degrees, to me it was really cold. So I stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And I knew that, and I really wanted to not come back the next day because mm-hmm. I was Like, yeah, this is not a place for me. I'm not going to go back to school.
Yeah.
And I literally cried. I'm sure more, like, people also cried on their first day of high school. But I thought that I was, like, super defeated. I was dumb. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But I think the second day I went back and I told all my teachers that I came from Thailand 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I don't understand English very well. But if they write the instructions down on the board, I will write it on my notebook. I'm going to go home, consult my little dictionary, because I didn't bring it to school because I didn't know that it was cheating still. And then I will figure out what it's saying and then I'll do the homework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of them, all of the teachers were like, okay, I understand. Let's do that.
Okay, I have a question.
So things got a little better for me, but it was still rough. Yeah.
There's an ESL program. Your ESL program, like, director people, like, weren't like, hey, this student that you have is an ESL student. Here are accommodations for this student.
No, for some reason, it was not streamlined like that. Okay. So I think it might be because we signed up for A-level classes, which was confusing to them. But maybe they tried to communicate that to us. But my mom and I also didn't understand English.
What was happening,
So no one could help us.
Yeah.
But I will say that I got some, like, essay and homework help from, we had this thing called study hall, which is like, if you're not in lunch or in class, you just have a free period. And that was full of ESL students, so it was a great place to meet friends like Cho, who came to visit me, and also other friends who, like, ended up going through, like, high school and now have careers, and, like, some live in, like, Norway, New Hampshire, very different places. But yeah, shout out to Mrs. Chase. She would, like, sit down and patiently review, like, each sentence that I was writing and was explaining to me, like, what this means, blah, blah, blah. And towards the end of that first year, I didn't really need help writing anymore, which I'm really grateful for. And I still actually write, like, birthday and Christmas cards to her, because she was such a big part of my education.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, where were we? Okay. We talk about high school forever, but
I mean, high school is such a defining period of everyone's life. Okay, so you went to high school, and then by the end of your first year, you were doing well, like, academically at least.
Oh, also, I didn't know that you could be, like, an honor student.
Okay.
So there's, like, honors and highest honors.
Oh.
So I got this little piece that said that I'm an honor student.
Okay.
And I brought it home and I was like, what is this piece of thing? And then my mom was like, I think it means that you have good grades. So in, like, reward, what is that thing called? Operant conditioning? No.
Sure.
Like, the thing where you, like, do something and you get a reward and you keep doing it.
Yeah.
She was like, okay.
Positive reinforcement? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Look at me, not even knowing.
I think that is operant conditioning, though. No. Okay, I don't know. I think it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's like an nested in.
Yeah. So she said, okay, every time you get this, we're going to go and get Thai food takeout. Oh. And I was like, hell yeah, let's do that. So I kept collecting those. And then that really motivated me because I love food. And I love quality time with mom. So
that
motivated me. Yeah. I think one other thing that I will say also was a turning point in my high school career was, so in my math class, obviously I thought I was good at math, but then I didn't know English, so I was like okay at it, I guess.
You were still good at math, just not math and English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time you get, like, above a 90 in class, you also get a pencil with glitter. And I was like, hells yeah, I'm going to collect all of these. And then toward the end of that first year, the teacher is supposed to recommend you for either, like, pre-algebra or geometry or something. But then, so she was reading off the names, and then she would say, Thomas, algebra, this other person, blah, 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 blah. And then when she got to my name, she said, come talk to me after class.
Oh.
So I went to talk to her, and she said, I think you should be in honors geometry. And I asked her what honors meant. Because I was confused. There's, like, the report card thing, and then there's this thing.
Yeah, what is this? Yeah.
So it's essentially, like, an AP class.
Oh, okay.
But it was for sophomores, so it was, like, not properly registered, but it had, like, more workload and, like, more independent projects. So then I said, okay, I don't know what this is, but all right.
Yeah.
And then, long story short, after that class, I learn about honors classes and AP, and I really thought that it fit like the pace that I wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And also I had really good friends in those classes, mm-hmm. which I think really helped make it a positive environment.
That's great.
So like all throughout this, do you have this goal of going to college? Like, are you prepping for this as you're going through? Or was it kind of like, I'm a senior, what am I going to do next? Like, mm-hmm. you're a senior.
I always have this recurring dream/fear that I did not finish high school and I was working at a Thai restaurant, which honestly, like, is not out of reality because my mom would pick up extra shifts to like buy me school supplies and stuff like that. And I would offer to help and like bus tables and they would pay me like $20 or something, which was a lot. So I always knew that if I didn't go to college, maybe I would like go to community college or take like night classes and maybe work at like TJ Maxx, which was also like a possibility.
They got good discounts for employees.
It's true, but they don't grant PhDs. So
no,
they
don't.
It's kind of like a
different different vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't know about college, but we had guidance counselors and mine did not like me.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. She said, listen, I had a Thai student a couple years ago. She did drugs.
Oh,
she dropped out.
What? And what does that have to do with me?
And I was like, why are you telling me this? I don't like this at all.
Yeah. Am I doing drugs? Am I dropping out?
No. So I would cry every time I see them.
Oh.
And they said, look, you should apply to all the community colleges in New Hampshire and University of New Hampshire, which is like UNH. And I said, with what money? And they said, well, you could pick up extra shift at the restaurant or something. So I actually didn't even know that I could get my applications waived. It was pretty terrible. But
that sounds like a terrible guidance.
Yeah. Like, I challenge you to find someone from New Hampshire who doesn't not hate it.
Okay. Sure.
But I, like I said, I was in some honors and AP classes and I have really good friends. And I actually found mentors through those classes.
Okay.
And one of them was Ola, who is from Nigeria as well. So she had like a similar story as me. She was a year ahead and she knew more about the college process because she also has a sister who was like 3 years ahead.
Oh,
So those older sisters, bro.
Yeah, spoiler alert, we all went to Northeastern. And it's because they have this program for underrepresented minorities called UJIMA. Have you heard of this word?
No.
So it's a Swahili word, which means collective work and responsibility.
Okay.
And this program was founded through the African American Institute at Northeastern to recruit and retain URM. And that was the only program available at this institution that had like 40,000 students. That was the only program that had like 25 students per class. So again, I didn't know about college. I didn't know about yield programs. I was confused why I was selected as one.
Yeah.
But essentially, it was explained to me through my mentor, Ola, that it's because aspects of my application or my story like really showed potential and that maybe with nurturing environment and guidance and like consistent like checking in on me, then that would make my first year experience and like college experience better, which
did it.
I
love that. That's great.
So thank you, Ola. I don't think she listens, but she always sends me like little cards as well.
That's cute. Okay, so you went to Northeastern in Boston?
Yes.
Another cold place. So I know you said you did, you were an orientation leader. It seems like you were really involved in the like community as well.
Yeah, so let's see, how did I become involved at Northeastern? I think I just thought that the people who give tours were just like really knowledgeable and really cool.
Okay. And we love knowledge and we love being cool.
And I wanted to be just like them.
I love that.
I didn't know about college. I didn't know about college. I didn't know about Northeastern. And if I joined this program, I would know those things for myself. And also I could tell those things to students who did not know.
Yeah.
So deep within my heart, I wanted to do this because I want others to know about programs could like help them.
Yeah.
Look at you. And also through Ujima, we were exposed to different types of like volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was a Husky ambassador, which is the tour guide. And I also volunteered to teach after school classes with Peace Through Play.
Okay.
So what they do is that they have a collection of games that have lessons and everything built in that surrounds the theme of conflict resolution.
Okay.
And this is important because kids learn best through games, but also a lot of these students grow up in like very violent family environment or neighborhood.
Yeah.
There would be some semesters I would get assigned to sort of like a temporary home where students get sent to because they're waiting on a court decision for their parents or guardian to figure out the next best thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really like working with students who are receptive to begin with, but I think it really taught me to learn how to avoid scratches or like literally punch in the gut.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And like really be assertive, but also be understanding and not take yourself so seriously because not everything you plan to teach will get taught.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you try your best, you avoid scratches, and it was good.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then what major were you when you...
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
So because we went through Ujima, they really wanted us to, at first, be undeclared and
interesting.
Go to major fair and talk to students, talk to admins, and like pre-rec classes to see what, like, where you're leaning towards.
Okay.
Yeah. So in many ways, that was less stressful for me as a first year student to know that there is this like buffer period. Mm-hmm. And I ended up majoring in behavioral neuroscience, which was kind of like a range of psychology to psychiatry to neuroscience to biology, because as we learn in science, everything is connected in one way or another.
Yeah.
And because of that, I got to take advantage of the co-op program, which is essentially a work program where for 6 months out of the year, you get to work your 9-to-5, but wherever. So some people worked at tech companies, some people worked internationally, some people worked at hospitals, biotechs, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to do internships I got to do co-ops from psychology to psychiatry. I was operating an MRI.
Hello.
At a college student aid?
Yeah.
That's true.
And I was so scared because I was like, okay, I hope I have no metal in me or I will have a bad day.
Oh, no.
And then I also got to co-op at a biotech where I learned genetic engineering, bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And I really found my lab as well at Northeastern that was working on gut brain microbiome at the time. And I will say that was like the winning environment for me because everyone was just so smart and so welcoming, and I felt like I had a voice, and I was always recognized for even like the smallest thing that I did. So shout out to Phil, who I'm still connected with to this day. And that really sort of like sparked my scientific journey. Yeah, this was like second year of college.
And did you stay in the same lab for the rest? Oh, that's so lovely.
Yes, yes. But it was funny because the PI, okay, we don't know how old he is because he's one of those people whose CV will say like, oh, bachelor's here, PhD's here. Unknown number of year, missing in Russia, come back.
Oh,
missing in Russia.
So he's kind of like mysterious.
A mystery man.
Okay. It's Kim Lewis. And then now, or at that time, every time he would do his round, like would come say hi to his grad student, he would introduce himself every time. And then
like, hi, I'm
Kim Lewis. And then I would say, I've been here 2 years. You need to know who I am. And he's like, okay, then. But it worked out because when I was applying to college, he actually wrote all the letters for me. So I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So it's good.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in the same lab for 3 years. Mm. Sounds like you did some co-op, which is like internship kind of vibes.
But you get paid and you have your 401ks.
Oh, hello.
I love that.
We love for a 401k. You. Not for us.
Not for us.
I don't have a 401k.
You'll get it soon.
One day.
One day. Not maybe. Soon.
Okay, so you didn't go to grad school straight after undergrad. So you graduated and then what happened?
I graduated and then I thought to myself, okay, what's the next best thing? Because yeah. I knew that I liked doing science. Mm-hmm. I had a bunch of questions I was curious about. I learned about what the field is and where I could be studying for grad school. Mm-hmm. I also knew people from industry mm-hmm. who showed me the ropes of, look, there are so many different types of jobs, so many different types of companies. And if you could see yourself there, you're still doing something meaningful and you're still using your knowledge to give back, like tying back to mm-hmm. the theme yeah. at the beginning. But also at that time, I felt that I was at a stage where I could be independent enough to pay all my own bills and even help my mom pay her rent. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was better for me to take some time to do that because I owe so much of my life to like her figuring out the first steps. And that was the least I could do. Mm-hmm. Plus, I was really fortunate to be in the Boston and Cambridge area because with my skill set and with the people that I know, I could find like really rewarding research opportunities that could also pay my bills, my mom's bills, and allow me to live in the frigid tundra of Boston.
Accurate.
Yes, yes. So I worked in some biotechs. I met some really cool people. And if you recall, what episode was that when we were talking about our like women role models?
Must have been from a year ago.
The first few episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. So for the first time, I actually worked under a woman role model and like for the company after as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was really valuable because had I gone to grad school right away, all of my mentors would have been just like people who could not relate to me on that level. And I learned so much from them. And they, again, are still like helpful and like reading all my essays. And like they send me pictures of their kids. And it's wonderful.
That's really cute.
Yeah.
Coming out of undergrad and like having to make the decision of like either entering like industry workforce or going to grad school. Did you always have the goal of going to grad school eventually?
Or I think
did you want to like mostly
just work
and like take care of your family?
Yeah, I think there were various stages in my scientific training or my schooling where I thought I can take this question and run with it. And grad school is going to be where I could really thrive.
Yeah.
But I was and I still am in a constant push and pull of like, am I prioritizing me and going for knowledge and answering these questions? Mm-hmm. Or am I taking care of my family? And because there's only two of us, I feel that the slice of pie is like half the pie. Yeah. So it's not really... It's hard at times to figure this out. But how I chose to do this was I want to be stable enough at a certain point to feel that, okay, if I go to grad school with a massive pay cut and being so far away from home and having like no time to go on vacation or go visit, like we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I guess... The answer is yes. Like, if it were up to me, I would pursue grad school. I would figure out how to do the science thing and not worry about anything. Yeah. But plot twist, I still do. but because of that, actually, I wanted to highlight something that I don't talk about enough because, I don't know, talking about myself is kind of weird, which is, well, I'm doing that now. But
we just did it for 40 minutes.
Yeah. So
you're doing great.
The first year I started working in biotech, mm-hmm. I was able to like support my mom, start my retirement, blah, blah, blah. But I also really wanted to give back because I was also reflecting a lot on my high school experience mm-hmm. and how a lot of us like didn't make it out of New Hampshire or like yeah. the 10-mile radius of high school.
Yeah. yeah.
And one of them was the lack of mentoring or uh-huh. resources or knowledge of what's mm-hmm. next. So I actually established a scholarship.
Oh, you fun people?
My high school. Okay. Yeah. So every year I set aside, I'm not going to tell you how much, but substantial amount of money to fund for someone's like MCAT course, EMT course.
Nice.
Or like pay for the application fees.
Yeah.
Or pay for them to help them get to like a summer research thing.
Oh,
okay. And so, every year in the spring,
she's a philanthropist.
One of my favorite things to do in the spring is actually reading these applications because.
Oh.
So the questions that I ask are not like, "What's your GPA?"
But yeah.
Like, what's your story? What is it that you want to do with this life? Yeah. What motivates you? Yeah. And people tell me. Like, I feel so privileged to hear the stories of how these students, like, persevere through high school because I know mm-hmm. how hard it was to be a high school student in that place. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. Oh, like, it's for the high school you went to. Yes. Yeah.
Because the least I could do is provide, like, someone emailed me earlier who's a winner from last year asking, like, oh, like, what are the different EMT courses I could take? Like, should mm-hmm. I do an internship at this hospital? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And like the least I could do was to like sit down with them and go through, okay, like what is it that you want to do? What are your strengths? How can we build yeah. this area, that area? Who can I introduce you to?
Yeah.
And I think that meant a lot to them, like that's beyond so the financial wonderful. Aspect.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, go on.
That's like such a big thing to yeah. do for somebody. That's like really amazing.
Thanks. So
yeah.
we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Almost 5 years strong.
So. Wow. Dang. Yeah. Okay, so someone you helped fund 4 years ago, like, probably is graduating
college. It's wild.
Wow. Yeah.
So this is aging myself, but I started out as a textbook fund because when I went to college, I couldn't believe how expensive textbooks were.
Oh,
they were like $300 a pop.
No. Oh, and here, listen, look at me right now. I'm not saying your textbooks are PDFs on eBay. But there are PDFs on eBay for $4 that might interest you. Anyways.
Yeah. And like there definitely aren't like websites that you can find them for free.
Yeah.
Not at all.
That's definitely Never. Not something you could do and easily Google.
Yeah.
Download out an ad block thing though before you start clicking. Anyways.
Yes. I'm really yeah. proud of that one. I feel like yeah. I could really give back.
That's like so way. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
I love that.
That's lovely.
You could be like the first support that someone gets that yeah. pushes them to like do big things.
Oh my god, I'm yeah. gonna cry. That's so lovely.
I cry enough for all of us.
Okay.
No, me too. What is like the one thing from biotech or like from not going straight into grad school that you think has contributed to like you being resilient and having a tenacity to move forward now that you're here?
Oh gosh. I would not say that I got all of that from biotech.
Okay.
I probably got that from living alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
From like my precious like tween years.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Or like something like we might have not experienced kind of thing since we came straight through.
Yes. Yeah. This is a very predictable Asama answer, but I really think that I met people who I would not have met in academia right away. There were people who are so smart, so thoughtful, and just like brilliant, who care so much about mentoring. And
yeah,
yeah.
They're just out there doing the thing, and people who care so much about managing, who actually listen to their students or trainees and people who will drop anything to just like make sure that you're on the right path. And I don't know, like every time I think of biotech, I just think of the fond memories of like working with certain scientists who were really like there to teach me. Because I think one of the negative stereotypes of biotech is that you're just there to pipette and make money. But yeah. I really learned so much from people. Yeah, and yeah. I started to have expectations of this is what a manager should do. This is what this is how a scientist who's like, you know, degrees or years above a trainee should treat someone on their team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will say that sometimes I'm disappointed when I work with people or like go to class and
yeah,
like more senior members aren't like treating me or like my classmates the same way, because like we're all people too. I don't have the degree that you have, but I'm a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that I got to experience that, because like had I come straight to academia, I would probably not have liked it, because it would have been high school all over again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the tea.
That's the tea. But now it's fun because some of them listen to the podcast, or I would have like Zoom calls with them and they would be like, you know, that thing you talked about in that episode. I remember that.
That's stressful. I do not like
it. They were like, you were doing cell culture? That's fun. Like, we don't do cell culture here anymore, but I'm glad you're learning these things.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we take a little break, I would like to ask you.
Yeah.
What is something that you would like to share with us? Like, just if there's one thing you want to give people.
A tidbit, if you will.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I mean, it's like, it doesn't have to be a thing. It could be like a story, or just like, oh, I appreciate these people, or this is something I reflect on a lot and I think this is important to my life. And
yes. Okay. So this reminds me of what I told both of you earlier, which is, so I'm first gen. My mom didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. No one in my family understands what America is like. Mm-hmm. But I really owe a lot of my like academic know-how or like understanding the PhD process to my partner Pete. Mm-hmm. And I feel really fortunate that he went through his PhD before me. Yeah. And I saw, you know, what it takes to write a personal statement, mm-hmm. or what it's like to typeset something, create a CV, to have meetings with mentees, or have sit in on diversity committees and have it be like both rewarding and draining, and
yeah,
just like getting a sense of what academia is like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was really helpful to me. And I wouldn't have been able to sort of like mentally prepare myself, mm-hmm. if I didn't know like at least one person going through the PhD.
Yeah.
Granted, he studies math and
it's a little different.
Not the wins.
At the present moment, he's doing proofs while we're recording.
Yeah.
So that's him. And
cute.
I feel like seeing that makes me feel better about pouring hours away at making one presentation, or like understanding that it actually takes work to mentor someone or to teach a whole course to someone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So shout out to Pete.
Yes.
Yes. Thank I'm going to play this episode to Pete and only play this part because
highlight into our interactions is Pete. Yesterday, Amanda goes, I don't know how to do triangle math. Pete was like, I don't know what that is.
I made a math joke and he laughed though. I said A equals B equals C. That's the cumulative property, commutative property, transitive property.
I don't know.
It's one of those. But A does equal B does equal C.
The infectious property.
Is that what that is?
No.
Okay.
It's basically the same thing in my brain.
Okay. Anyways.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take a little break.
Canva Pro is a premium plan of Canva that comes with additional features, including unlimited storage for photos and assets. You can upload your own images and access millions of photos. You'll get exclusive access to 400,000 free photos, illustrations, and templates. Sign up and get a 30-day free trial with our link, so you can make cool things to put up on your walls or flyers to promote your events. And you can do this by going to this link. Partner.canva.com chegg.com/triplicates.
Chegg Study gives you access to homework help and allows you to look up answers to questions found in textbooks, which Chegg keeps as a database. You can also submit new questions to experts and get answers to them as little as 30 minutes. Use the code CHEGGAFF5. That is all capital letters, CHEGGAFF5, for $5 off your first month of Chegg Study.
Welcome back, everyone. Before we say goodbye, Asama, or maybe all of us, I don't know. You'd like to tell your younger self? Asama, you can go first.
There's so many stages of my younger self. Mm. I would say to be patient because you will meet such incredible people. Mm-hmm. You will also meet like not incredible people, but you can like not be friends with them, but it's fine.
That's true.
But no matter how like hard the first day of high school was or how confused I was about college, like the world is so big and life is full of so many unexpected twists and turns, and you could meet some really cool people. And it's one of my favorite things is to like learn about them and see how they think and see how they navigate the world. So it'll be a treat. Popcorn to Amanda.
Hi, thank you for your question. Great talk. I think something I would tell my younger self. Also, this is reminding me of RuPaul's Drag Race when it's like they pull up the picture of them as a child. And it's just them crying to, it's going to be okay.
Should I edit in?
No, it's fine. No. Yeah, but I bring that up only because I'm going to say something that they would say on RuPaul's Drag Race, which is everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. That's it. Just keep going. That's all. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, if you don't love yourself.
Oh, no, no, no.
I forgot how. Yeah. Anyways. I think I would tell myself, and it's something that I still struggle with, your happiness shouldn't be interconnected with your productivity. Like that shouldn't determine how happy you are, because you are going to fail. And it's okay to fail. It's like how you pick yourself up from that and like move forward. And it's okay to ask for help when you fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
For sure. Look at us growing up.
Oh, I love that. I'm
going to cry.
I know.
Anyways.
Okay.
Let's round out the show, I guess. Wipe our tears. Do some observations. Run some stats on our data. Sama, what's our question this week?
Oh, this question is so real. Second year PhD land.
Yeah.
The question is, would you rather be able to pipette with both hands or avoid carpal tunnel from pipetting altogether?
Can I say something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I pipette with way less than both of you.
Okay, then.
Like, I would agree.
Oh.
Like, I'm out here gluing stuff. Drilling holes.
Okay. Maybe would you rather be ambidextrous? So whatever would be helpful. Repetitive tasks that you do a lot. Like if you could switch.
Oh, that would be very useful.
But maybe you get carpal tunnel. So which one?
You know what? Let's avoid the carpal tunnel, actually. That's what I'm going to say. This is a carpal tunnel hate group.
Speak for yourself.
You want carpal tunnel?
You want carpal tunnel?
Okay. So like biotech, great. Got all of that. Yeah. I actually had carpal tunnel in biotech because we were working in this like anaerobic chamber with vinyl sleeves, and the cuffs is actually really heavy. So when we do really fine movement in there, it's actually a lot on your joints.
Yeah.
So I had carpal tunnel and it's like not terrible.
You say that now.
I bounce back.
And
I know. Wait till you're like 60.
Yeah.
And you feel that carpal tunnel.
Well, hopefully
all over again.
In my 60s, I would not be trusted to pipette and I would be training someone
to
do that.
Writing grants.
After but it'll
running
come
a business.
Back to haunt you.
So when you type on the little keyboard.
Or I will invest in all the little machine robots.
Yeah, listen. By the time we're 60, we probably don't even have to move our fingers to do anything. It'll just be little headbands connected to us, and we just be like, pop, 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 pop.
That's scary. So on Twitter, I saw this new way of pipetting using not your thumb.
Yes.
So that you're like, you're holding the pipette like this so that you don't have to move your wrist back and forth when you eject your tip. So assuming that that won't be as damaging to my hands, I'd pipette with
both hands.
Will that
not just give you carpal tunnel in your
finger?
What's
just your finger? I don't know, bro.
Well, what are you doing with your
wrist? I'm still going to get carpal tunnel from typing.
From like,
how much is it going to benefit me?
Yeah.
To not get
That's what I'm saying. Like, avoid the carpal tunnel.
But only from pipetting.
Oh,
you
no.
still have to type those grants.
No, you could do speech to text. You're right. Anyways, wow, we really just do
you
a
could,
number.
You
on
could
our
also
bodies.
Get carpal tunnel from typing on your phone. So my answer was I would rather be ambidextrous.
Okay. And yours is not to get carpal tunnel. So
I guess
about.
So. Wait, that's a waste though. I'd rather be ambidextrous because I don't even be pipetting. If it's just if it's specifically, I can only avoid carpal tunnel from pipetting and I don't pipette.
100% of the PhD students in our study would rather be ambidextrous, whether it be for pipetting or otherwise.
Yeah.
Instead of getting carpal tunnel.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's all. That's okay. all I have for you today. Okay. If you want to know more, you'll just have to catch me out in the wild, in the real world. We can chat.
Yeah.
But if there's something else you want to hear besides me, then you can let us know.
Yes. And you don't have to find us out in what we call reality in life.
No, find us on the internet.
We're on the internet. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at triplicatespod. You can email us at triplicatespod@gmail.com. And if you like us, support us on patreon.com/triplicatespod. And with that,
watch our videos on YouTube. Obrigada y ciao.
Gracias y adios.
Don't forget to wash your hands. Kapunka, bye!